Welcome to Profiles. I'm George Walker, and our guest is Sharon Ammon. Sharon's a professor of theater and drama and the director of theater at St. Mary of the Woods College near Terre Haute. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, over the years, WFIU listeners have had a chance to hear you talk about productions you've directed at St. Mary of the Woods and even some you've been in the area. We've never had a chance to ask about you. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Wow.
Yes, let the good times roll.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up mostly in Colorado. I lived in New Orleans and on the Mississippi Gulf Coast when I was small. And when I was about 9 or 10, we moved to Colorado and stayed there for most of my, till I was in my 20s.
So that's why I don't hear the New Orleans sound in your voice.
Yes, partially. But I've also tried to school out some of the Colorado furs and errs.
Now, theater seems to be just such a large part of your life as I look over your bio. When did you get into theater?
Well, I recall actually my debut in theater being a little song from MAME. You coaxed the blues right out of the horn, MAME, when I was in fifth grade. I recall doing that and forgetting all the words to it. And actually, the only words I could remember were, "You charm the husk right off of the corn." So I just said that over and over and over again. And that was the first and last time I had real stage fright. I thought, I am going to get over this. And then I just really delved into being in theater as much as possible. And I got over it. It may be coming back in my old age, but...
So at a 10-year-old,
yes.
You made an active decision.
Yes, I did.
So then I'm assuming high school was drama?
I did drama in high school, and I was voted most talented and most musical, even though I don't think I was the most musically inclined. But my big, big deal in high school was that I played Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl.
Wow.
When I was a senior in high school. And I was in every show. I was not a popular young woman except when I was on stage. So I think the awkwardness of being a teenager, it was really pretty tough, pretty rough for me. I was never invited to the prom. It was so sad. But while I was on stage, I felt much more special and much more myself than I felt in real life, much more relaxed on stage.
Now, you went to college in Colorado then.
I did. I actually wanted to go to Stanford and was accepted, but I didn't have any money. I would have had to work 60 hours a week to go to Stanford. I couldn't even afford the plane ticket out of Colorado. And I also had applied to the University of Colorado in Boulder, and that's where I went to college, and I loved it, loved it.
What did you study? I mean, I'm assuming you continued to do theater things.
Well, I had this notion when I was young that if I didn't study something really difficult, because I loved academics as well as performing, that I wouldn't be a worthwhile person. So I sort of tried not to do theater for a while. And I began in international relations, I think. And then I switched to music. I was a music major for about a year and a half. And I even did a stint at Indiana University in Bloomington. And I was a complete failure in music here at Bloomington.
Oh, dear.
But I did get very interested in theater. I went back to Boulder and eventually switched to a theater major.
What channels did being a worthwhile person lead you to?
I kept thinking that theater that wasn't difficult enough until I discovered that really doing theater well actually was very difficult. And as a matter of fact, my roommate at the University of Colorado was a theater major and took me to an audition there. And she didn't get in the show, but I did. And that was the beginning of working at the University of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Where I met a wonderful mentor. And I think that has a lot to do with your focus in life so much when you meet somebody when you're 19, 18 or 19, who becomes a mentor.
We're talking with Sharon Ammon on Profiles. She's a professor of theater and drama and the director of theater at St. Mary of the Woods College near Terre Haute. And we're talking about Boulder days for college. You actually got a master's there as well.
Yes, I began my master's there. It took me a long time to get my BA because I actually dropped out of school now and then and did some professional children's theater and some troupe work and saved a little money and then went back to school. And I had almost finished my master's when my husband got a job as a presidential management intern in Washington, D.C., and I followed him there, and I finished my master's thesis while I was performing in Washington, D.C. For the University of Colorado.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about days in Washington.
Oh, you know, the culture shock moving from Boulder, Colorado, which was really kind of low-key and a little hippy-dippy and pretty left-wing. Let me tell you, when President Nixon resigned, the liquor mart in Boulder sold out of champagne at noon. And I've kept those same politics right into my old age. But Colorado was very a beautiful state, of course, and Boulder's nestled right in the mountains. And it has a laid-back, beautiful feeling. And everything's wide and open in Colorado. And I'd never been to the East Coast. And to me, D.C. was such a culture shock. Everything seemed really, really small and tight. And then when I went to Manhattan for the first time, it was even more so. Very, very different kind of pace of living. So at first I was homesick, but then I just grew to love D.C. There was a much bigger pool for auditioning. I found that I could get work and that I could meet wonderful people, and there were more challenges. So I always encourage young people, when you move away, when you move far away, which you should do for part of your life at least, give yourself 3 months of intense homesickness and make yourself not go back home. It's just so easy to go skittering back home because you do get really homesick.
It seems that this is part of a pattern for you.
Yes.
At 10 years of age, you decided you weren't going to have stage fright anymore.
Yeah.
And then after being in D.C. for just a little while, you decide and pass on to your students over the years that homesickness is something that, in fact, you should indulge. But at a certain point, that's it. This seems to be a characteristic of you, Sharon.
It is, because I'm very, very independent-minded. And my father dropped out of high school when he was 16 and became a radio operator on a Japanese boat, which he was on when World War II broke out. But that's another story. And he went all over the world. And my mother was very much a home person and prone to homesickness, never learned to drive. So I have both strains in me, and I struggle against the wanting to rush back to comfort, just as everyone does. But I keep making myself have challenges that take me out of the comfort zone.
Now, you'd done both straight theater and some musical theater.
Yes.
So you say that in terms of straight music, that turned out to be more of a challenge than
pleasure. Oh, yes, and
pleasure.
I love it. You know, I love classical music. I love art songs. But when you're young, I mean, when I was young, I thought I could do anything, of course. And I love singing art songs, but I'm really not that good, you know, compared to a really, really good art. Yeah, I'd rather listen to someone else. I'm just much better at musical comedy. And it's partially, it's not really the range of my voice, which is considerable, but it has to do with the tendency to fool around with my voice and sort of play with it. And it's a personality. Now, I got in trouble. I almost got kicked out of a production of Rigoletto for batting my eyelids in time to the music. I was playing Maddalena, which is really it's a pretty sad opera. So I thought a little levity might help, but evidently it doesn't help.
Tell us a little bit about some of the other roles that you auditioned for while you were in Washington with your husband in the government service.
Well, one of the jokes about me that has continued to this day is that every time I move somewhere new, I'm in a melodrama. The first thing I'm in is something that shows bad acting to the extreme, because Colorado is full of melodrama houses, and that was my first professional work, was in a melodrama house. And when I moved to Washington, D.C., they were starting a melodrama house in downtown Washington, and I went to an audition call. There were hundreds of people, and when I found out it was melodrama, I thought, I might be able to do this. And I got a really large role. And I worked in a production that featured Calamity Jane. I was Calamity Jane for about a year, the same production, in which every night I said, I've got a feeling of foreboding, which eventually I really did. Like, I'm never going to get out of this. And because musicals are where I've made most of my rather poor living on stage. Because of that, there's a split in theater between musical comedy people and people who do straight plays. And I've always really enjoyed both. I'm really diversified that way.
So you did melodrama and then edged into drama?
I had done the Colorado Shakespeare Festival, and I did find when I was younger in Boulder, which was absolutely wonderful. And I did find at that time in Washington, D.C., this is the late 70s and through the mid 80s before I moved to Europe. And dinner theater was very, very large, and it was the only way you could really make a living on stage, or one of the few ways, unless you were in the really big theaters like arena stage. And I did find a dinner theater that also did straight plays. So I did a production of Vanities there, and people who saw me in that were more interested in me doing drama. So I was able to bridge it somewhat.
So you were breaking into the Washington, D.C. theater community.
It's a great community. It's a wonderful community.
Now, you mentioned moving to Europe.
Yeah, that kind of derailed. I never had really clear plans of what I was going to do with my life. I mean, one of the jokes my husband has is there was a time in D.C. where I couldn't find a regular job, and I found a job acting. And I thought, that's just so – that reminds me of the Lily Tomlin bit where she's trying to get a position in a donut shop. She's an actress who's trying to get a position in a donut shop. So I would fall into things, which I wouldn't recommend as a life plan to anyone, but it worked really well for me. And I was going to get an agent in New York and really continue performing in that way when my husband had a chance to work in Europe. And I was so excited to be able to see Europe. He went to Europe, and I was deciding whether I was going to go then. We've worked apart a lot. And I was in a production of The Pirates of Penzance, the Linda Ronstadt, Kevin Kline version, and I was playing Ruth at a dinner theater. And I stayed in Washington to the end of that run, and there were some other shows coming up and a director there who may have had contacts in New York. Who knows what would have happened? But I decided to go to Europe, where the first production I did was a melodrama.
Let's pause just briefly before you wander off to Europe to do the melodrama and talk a little bit about Pirates of Penzance. What do you like about that show?
Oh, I love Gilbert and Sullivan. Sometimes serious musicians belittle it a little bit, Gilbert and Sullivan. But what I love about Gilbert and Sullivan just generally is the wonderful cleverness of the lyrics. And when I was young, I was very good at patter songs and not as good as at the musical part, but really good at – give me a lot of words, I would say. I love the cleverness and the insane happiness of the music, even in the most difficult situations. When you're in a production of something like Pirates of Penzance, which I was in for I think about 4 months, 8 times a week, no matter how you feel when you hear that music, you just feel joyful. And it's almost a silly joyfulness, you know, just all out of proportion of what you should probably be feeling. The sound of that music to me is just gorgeous.
Would you pick a piece from Pirates of Penzance for us?
Yes. Well, the one I love the most, of course, is I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General.
Modern Major General, I've information vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quit the fights historical, from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with maths mathematical. I understand equations both the simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. News. Ooh. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
Very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and immaculous. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
I am the very model of a modern major general. The choice of our guest on Profiles, Sharon Ammon, who's the director of theater and drama and the director of theater at St. Mary of the Woods College near Terre Haute, and our guest on Profiles. you were in Pirates of Penzance for 4 months. Meanwhile, husband had moved to Europe, and you followed him as per your usual life plan.
We moved to Germany, and we traveled all around Europe. And I actually got a chance to study at a drama studio in London for a year as well. So we were overseas for 5 years, real homesick at first. My husband said, go out to the Kaiserslautern Performing Arts Center run by the military and audition. And the first thing they had on the agenda was a melodrama. And they had never seen me before, and they had a lot of people audition. It was community theater, and a lot of Germans as well as Americans. But they immediately said, oh, this is the perfect person for a melodrama. I eventually ended up working there for a while, running the theater there as a government employee, running the theater for the army.
So you became a bureaucrat.
I became a bureaucrat for a while.
Wow.
It was exciting.
Tell us a little bit about studying in London.
Studying in London was just wonderful. I don't know if I learned as much when I was there or if I goofed off a little bit too much in London, but in retrospect, all the things I learned taught me so much. There was a school in Ealing, a suburb of London, called the Drama Studio. And the Drama Studio is a one-year professional acting program for people from the ages of 21 to 50. And they have a large group of British students and a really small group of Americans. And the pound and the dollar were almost one-to-one at this time. So I actually could afford to do this, which I never could when I was a child. And it was very, very competitive to study there. It was a lot of work, and we studied everything from radio, TV, sword fighting, singing, voice, all full-time. And I never gotten a chance to do it completely full-time like that. It was like getting an MFA in a year. And it was just incredibly enjoyable. It taught me so much about teaching. I had teachers who were wonderful, teachers who were crazy. It was just marvelous. And I also learned to take really harsh criticism and not really let it bother me, because I was in my early 30s by then, and it was a lot easier for me to be, you know, thrown to the wolves.
And once again, you were working separate from your husband.
Yes, I was in London while he was in Germany.
Back in Germany, where you took on the bureaucracy and were working with the army, tell us a little bit about what that involved. What were you doing?
It was really a difficult job because I was a theater specialist, is the name of it. It's GS7, I think. It's not too far up the line there. And I ran the theater and the productions, and it was just an amazing amount of work. And I worked for a woman who had a little cot in her office. She never left. Now, I did leave at times. But I directed a great deal and had to do a lot of the legwork and working with people in the military who were all wonderful and became big theater aficionados when they went back to the States. So it's great. There are GIs all over this country who can't get enough theater now. One of the stories I love to tell is that I did a production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf because I had a Royal Air Force fellow who was an incredible actor and a teacher from America who was incredible, George and Martha. And in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, George has to break a glass, a whiskey bottle, in anger. When you're working for the government, you have to order these and fill out a whole bunch of forms to get these. And I was called into the office to explain why I wanted a dozen breakable bottles. And I had to explain that I could not use a real bottle on stage because it would hurt someone. And then they wanted to know why I wanted more than the number of performances. And I explained very carefully that if you don't rehearse, you usually can't do it very well. So it was just very funny explaining all of these things to them. They had such a curious expression on their face. Oh, all right, well, we'll okay it.
So you were your own supply sergeant.
I was. It was crazy. I was the fire marshal for the theater, which I know nothing about. But
we're talking with Sharon Ammon on Profiles. Sharon, a professor of theater and drama and the director of theater at St. Mary of the Woods College in Terre Haute. But we're talking about days in Germany. How long were you in Germany?
For 5 years. Actually, you would say four. We had a 3-year tour, and then we signed on for 2 more years. Now, my husband is a civilian, but he was working for the Air Force, and I worked for the Army. And I also taught courses for the University of Maryland, which had an extension over there, and that got me kind of interested in the University of Maryland.
So you came back to the
States.
We came
back to Washington.
Now, you'd been very successful in the theater area in Washington. Is this what you continued to do at that point?
I did do some. I worked for a GRE prep company for a while. I finally did some auditions and got into a company do black patent leather shoes really reflect up? If our listeners know the show, I was the cookie nun. So that kind of tells you what kind of character woman I am. After I was back in Washington for a few years, I went to a large nationwide National Dinner Theater audition. And at the same time, I applied for a fellowship to do a PhD at the University of Maryland. And I got a really great fellowship. And I also got offered a number of roles from the National Dinner Theater auditions. And I could tell that if I continued doing the roles I had been doing, I would be playing Domina in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Ruth in Pirates of Penzance, and a lot of Fiddler on the Roofs until I was really, really, really long in the tooth. Because you really, in commercial theater, you have to do what you're the very best at, and a sort of broad comedy. And for those who haven't seen me, I have a big old honker of a nose, which really says character on stage. And I decided I would really like to do some academic work and combine it with theater. And I ended up working for a political satirist named Mrs. Foggy Bottom, singing political satire 4 nights a week while I was doing my PhD. And it was just, it was the best of both worlds for me because I love research. It was on the Maryland campus at College Park, and the political satire work was in Washington, D.C.
You were a commuter.
I was commuting all over the place. I lived in Virginia. I traveled for an hour to get to school.
So you were pursuing a PhD. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing there. What were the focuses of your PhD?
Well, my master's degree had focused on readers' theater, and I love combining literature with theater. So I, at first, wanted to do some research in adaptations, which I love to do. I ended up directing for the University of Maryland and doing adaptations for scholarly conferences for the University of Maryland for some money, extra money. They would have a directing job open, and I would apply for it, even though I was a PhD student there. And twice I got the position and got extra money that way. And then I started working with an incredible scholar there named Catherine Schuler, who does Russian scholarship. But she also helped do a lot of conferences, and I start putting together women's studies pieces and readers' theater pieces and having a great time. So I did do a lot of work in adaptation. I directed some children's theater at a theater in McLean while I was there. But eventually toward the end of that process, started doing some historical research of a vaudevillian named May Irwin, who has been sort of my pet scholarly work since that time.
I'll ask you about that in just a moment, but it strikes me that both with your undergraduate, where you would work some and then do some theater and so on, and here where you were a working woman at the same
yes.
time pursuing, that you might be very sympathetic with many of the people now who are, some of whom are doing it because they're unemployed, but some because they would like to be better employed.
Oh, yes.
People trying to better themselves by taking college courses or finishing a GED while they're also working a job.
Oh, boy, I really am. My husband and I teach a graduate course out of St. Mary the Woods College now, and Masters in Leadership Development, which is this great program. Most of the people are full-time workers. And when I taught overseas in Europe, I taught a lot of GIs who were staying up late at night to take English grammar classes. I couldn't believe it. They get up at 5 in the morning and take a class from 7 to 10 at night. So I do have a lot of empathy and a lot of ways to work with people who are trying to do a lot of things at once.
Our modern multitaskers, huh?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this vaudevillian.
Oh, May Irwin, yay. I had a wonderful teacher at University of Maryland named Patty Gillespie, who's a really foremost theater historian. And she wanted me to do some theater history, which I was really frightened of. The theater history is really difficult. It's hard to recapture something that's really a ephemeral art. And I was supposed to go to an archive in Washington, D.C. and do something on a performer who had performed in Washington. And I'm not kidding, George, but somebody gave me a book on women in comedy and it fell off my shelf and it opened to this woman named May Irwin, who was a huge star. And it mentioned that she had done something for the press club in Washington, D.C. and President Woodrow Wilson had dubbed her the Secretary of Laughter. And I thought, this should be fun. Now, that paper didn't turn out to be the best in the world, but May Irwin turned out to be this gold mine, this incredible vaudevillian predating Sophie Tucker, who was probably the foremost comic star in New York and in the country for a long period of time around the 1890s, and who published a cookbook, did all sorts of work in feminism, but was still well-loved by everyone, and had a very troubling part of her life that had to do with singing songs in black dialect, which was very popular at that time. So I've been able to study a lot of different facets of her career, and I'm working on a book with an editor at the University of Illinois Press, and we're hoping that that will work out well.
Now, you mentioned that she sang in addition to doing comedy. Can you give us any of the flavor of one of her jokes?
Yes, I can. I can actually sing you a little bit of a song if you want.
Okay.
Without, you know, any of the the real insidious thing about the songs that are in dialect was that her most popular song was about a bully who was a black bully who challenged the new bully that came to town. And it kind of gave a sort of dangerous feel to the new African-American in the city. The song, she was kind of chubby, the song about the bully was accompanied with a tuba, and it's a ragtime ditty, and she would sing this little part of it. And this is the innocuous part, and it was called The Bully, she would sing, "When I walk that levee round, 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 when I walk that levee round, 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 when I walk that levee round, I'm looking for that bully and he must be found." And people, it was the most famous song in the country for a long time.
She was round, round, round.
And she was round, 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 round.
So that was one of the focuses, and this fitted in with something that I think had been an interest of yours as well, and that's being a woman, of course, in the theater, women in the theater both from a drama point and also from a historical point.
Yes,
And there's a chance that the book may even come out before people get a chance to hear us talk about it.
We're hoping so. I hope the person working with me is listening and saying, boy, I better draw up that contract with Sharon Ammon.
So now you've finished up your PhD work in Maryland.
Yes.
What happens next in the life of Sharon?
The really humorous thing that happened, my husband and I, Ronnie, really decided that I would try a career in academia. So I would just start applying for jobs. Well, jobs in theater in academia are really, that first job is the really difficult one to find. But then I started to get really quite a few offers or beginning interviews, and I went out to some places. I had the luxury, because Ron had a very good job, of just kind of picking and choosing and not taking the first thing that came to me. And it was toward the end of 1 year, when I had finished the dissertation, everything was done, that I saw this ad in Art Search for a job at St. Mary the Woods College outside of Terre Haute, Indiana, for somebody who could do everything. It was the most impossible job description I've ever read for a theater person. I said, I've just got to call them. I'd send my resume and see what this is about. And the long and the short of it was that I was flown out to St. Mary the Woods. There were two or three other people competing for the job. And the minute I walked into St. Mary the Woods College, I thought, this is the most gorgeous, wonderful place I've ever been. Music and theater coexist really well and collaboratively, which is not true at most places. And a wonderful woman named Sister Sue Petrus was instrumental in hiring me And Ron and I decided to make a go of it. So he stayed in Washington while I worked at St. Mary of the Woods. And we kept putting off decisions of whether I should come back to Washington or not until eventually he just retired early and came out here.
So the degree is wrapped up. You've been doing a lot of work in the Washington, D.C. area. Time for a little music. What would you like to hear now?
Well, I would like to hear a little bit, since I have been at St. Mary of the Woods for 12 years, of our upcoming musical, and that is Urinetown. I think I'd love to hear Run, Freedom, Run, which has a beautiful sound to it and a little of the satire I love so much.
Run, freedom, run. Freedom, run away. My friend, you have to run, 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 run. Freedom, run away. That freedom sun will shine someday. Till then, you better run, 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 run. Freedom, run away.
I'm frightened.
Oh, yes, well, you should be. Freedom is scary. It's a blast of cool wind that burns your face to wake you up.
Literally?
Yes. There's a trickle of sweat.
There's a trickle of sweat.
It's dripping in your ear.
It's dripping in your ear.
Yeah. Still, you gotta run, 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 run. Freedom, run away.
Run, run away.
Now, don't you fret. And never fear. Your freedom's a one, 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 one. Freedom, run away.
Run, freedom, run.
There's a great big clad bell on your tail.
Run, freedom, run.
And he's put his henchmen on your trail.
Run.
That was Run, Freedom, Run from Urinetown, a selection from our guest on Profiles, Sharon Ammon, the theater director at St. Mary of the Woods College near Terre Haute.
Production support for Profiles comes from Smithville, a locally owned business serving central and southern Indiana since 1922, with residential and business internet, voice, and security services. Smithville, local pride, global technology. Information at smithville.net. And The Funeral Chapel of Bloomington, providing funeral and crematory arrangement services for the chapel, church, and graveside. The Funeral Chapel, to honor and commemorate. 333-4400 or online at pdcfuneralchapel.com.
Sharon, you said that in many ways it just seemed like a perfect fit, and it grew about 12 years at this point?
Yes, it has been 12 years. And I was able to introduce Sister Sue, who is the music director, to Gilbert and Sullivan for, of course she knew Gilbert and Sullivan, as an idea to do at St. Mary's. We did do Pirates of Penzance, and I directed it. And then I wrote a song about the foundress, Mother Theodore Guerin, called I Am the Very Model of a Modern Mother Theodore, parodying the parody of Modern Major General. I love that style of music. And we ended up doing the Mikado. We did lots of wonderful musicals. And then a year ago, Sister Sue unfortunately died. And this year will be the first time that I've done a musical without her. And the musical that I have chosen is Urinetown, which kind of shows the span of my interest in musicals. This is a very contemporary musical. It's a decade old now, but that's contemporary, I think.
Talking a little bit more about St. Mary of the Woods, St. Mary of the Woods is, well, you've described it as beautiful, as a place where music and art are sisters. And sister is a good description because it's an all-girls school.
It is.
With
all women.
Yes, indeed.
I say girls a lot, too, and I'm corrected. Girls and boys, though.
Tell us a little bit about what attracted you to that and how you feel about working in an all-women environment.
At first, I was a little leery. I was excited because of my roots in women's studies, working with all women. But I had been teaching at the University of Maryland, and I had taught several places, and it always had been a co-ed group. I thought, I'm going to try this out now and see how it goes. And I really discovered that women, and in women's college, women who are a little timid about speaking out really start to blossom. I really discovered that I had students coming in who were very, very talented, who would not have done well at the University of Maryland in the theater department because of the competition and because of the kind of male trying to learn to be as aggressive and outspoken and as risk-taking as a lot of men are, especially in comedy. But women alone start to develop those skills. And then as they go on, perhaps to graduate school, they're more ready to compete. So I found at St. Mary of the Woods, as small as it is and as small as our theater program is, we already have a couple of students who are going to prestigious graduate schools in theater and who have worked professionally in theater. And I think it's the nurturing aspect. I had always been very, very competitive when I was young. And now that I'm older and I see that there's so much talent that needs to be nurtured and brought out when you're 18, 19, 20, so that you can compete in a more difficult environment later, I feel kind of called upon, probably by Mother Theodore Guerin, to be the person who nurtures and finds that talent and encourages.
So you're teaching mostly young women. At the same time, in some of your productions, you actually do bring men in for them.
Oh, yes. We bring in men all the time. They seem to like being around all the young women. I don't know what that is, George, but we do bring in men. In fact, we have a guest artist with us right now, Brandon Wentz, who works at Crossroads Rep and just finished his MFA at Georgia. And he will be in Urinetown, and we have men from the community and faculty members and ISU students. So we do use men quite a bit.
In addition, I've actually seen a paper that you wrote about all women Shakespeare.
Oh, yes, I did. You know, a long time ago in the 40s or 50s, at St. Mary of the Woods, they did all female Shakespeare as they did everywhere at that time. And then it just kind of faded away. So I actually, the excitement of St. Mary of the Woods is you can do so many wonderful, innovative things that combine innovation and tradition. So I started doing all female Shakespeare again. And we did Twelfth Night was our first production of all female. And then we sprinkled a few men in here and there, sometimes playing the female characters, which is great fun.
How does it work when you're working with women and you're asking them to play male roles? What does that do for them as actors?
Well, it does bring them into a position. I mean, for Shakespeare, is so gender neutral since all men played all of the roles. But I've sometimes used male roles in other shows, and it does give them a swagger usually and a bravura that makes their own personality grow. And we all have obviously feminine and masculine, traditional feminine and masculine traits that you can try on for size. A lot of fun. Just as men doing women is a lot of fun for them, I'm sure.
Sharon, in addition to your directing and teaching, you've also been pursuing a rather active professional career as well in the area.
Sort of, I guess. I think that started with meeting Arthur Feinsod, who was the past chair of the Department of Theater at ISU, and his work with Summer Stage or Crossroads Repertory Theater, which has been at ISU for many, many, many years. And I had asked him if I could have a few students audition for the Professional Summer Theater. That was 2005. And he said I could if I would audition as well. And I think that was just a ruse to get in some old broad that they needed for a couple of shows. But I did Spitfire Grill and Plaza Suite that summer. And since then, I've been doing odd summers there, like 2007, I got to direct The Mysteries of Irma Vep, which I loved. But then last summer, of course, I got to adapt and write with John Burst, a musical director, the children's version of Velveteen Rabbit, or the musical version.
When you were working with Velveteen Rabbit, in addition to working with music again, you also were working with dance. Tell us a little bit about yourself and dance.
Well, one thing I learned about risk-taking is that you've got to do things that you're not that great at. And when I was really little, I got a lot of dance because my mother wanted to be a dancer, and I was really very mediocre. And so I gave it up when I was a teenager. And then as I got older and realized that you can learn from anything, and I got more secure about not being really good at everything, I took a lot more dance. So I know a lot of dance, and I know a lot of steps, but I'm not a very good dancer. But I love to choreograph, and my choreography, of course, is not professional choreography, but it's more a musical comedy kind of movements that go well with people who probably don't dance. And I love working with real choreographers. Teresa McCullough at ISU is wonderful. I have a friend from a professional choreographer from Washington, D.C., who has come out and helped me do some of the bigger numbers. But I do love combining kind of, you know, like a sort of jazz feeling and a rock feeling and steps that echo all kinds of schmaltzy dance and go in and out. Usually comic dance.
You mentioned that one of the things that you tried to do as an undergraduate was to kind of move away from theater because you felt that it wasn't perhaps big enough and perhaps wasn't as important as some other areas. It strikes me, though, that you've certainly explored the riches of theater from just a variety of perspectives.
Oh, thank you. I hope so.
Now, you're working mainly with young women, but at the same time, you've also got a professional career going. You've got a book in process. As you think about things that you've done over your past career, what's the part that's been the most fun?
The most fun?
Yeah.
I think as I mature, probably the most joy and fun that I've gotten, you know, when I was younger, it was I had to perform all the time. And in fact, I recommend that young people who have to perform all the time feel that compulsion, really just go into theater and skip trying to major in something else to be practical. Because if they're literate and they get a good theater degree, they will get other jobs and they will always be unhappy if they don't pursue it. And I love that for years. But now I would say the most pleasure and fun I get is watching a performance that I've directed and watching the actors grow and make it their own and add things. I watched every performance of everything I direct. Of course, I haven't done like long, long, long runs. But The Mystery of Irma Vep, every night I was just so proud of the actors. And when I see the young women on stage, I almost get kind of choked up here when I see them really blossom and start to do remarkable things and be big risk takers and be really, really funny. It's such a joyful feeling that I try to etch it and remember it forever. I always tell them that I'm going to remember this moment forever, what you did for me. And I love it because it's ephemeral. We try to capture things and keep them forever. But this just, it happens that one night and it's for you and it's for that audience and then it's gone. So it's even that much more precious.
If you weren't in theater, if one of those other roads had attracted you as you were exploring them as an undergraduate, what would you like to have been?
Gee, I guess that I was going to say a writer of some sort or even an editor, a job where I got to read lots and lots of wonderful things. And edit them and read them. I think that's what I did enjoy the most. Sometimes in my idealistic modes, I think, oh, yes, I'd love to be a medical professional, but that would not work for me at all. I think some sort of editing job or something where I got to read all day would be heaven.
And you certainly, with the advanced degrees and working on the book, have gotten some chance to enjoy that particular aspect.
I do, yeah.
Now, coming up, you're directing a production of Urinetown. You've got some other plans. Any particular things that you've got planned that are perhaps some fulfillments or some detours as things go on for you?
I'm very, very involved in teaching for the Earth Literacy Masters at St. Mary of the Woods. And we got a grant to kind of combine looking at the environment, environmental concerns, and combining that with the musical Urinetown and doing some panels and things like that. So I'm very excited about that.
How interesting.
I think that'll be
Will that cool. be something as part of your community involvement as well?
Yes, it will.
One of the things that's characterized your work at St. Mary of the Woods and I think in other communities as well has been that you've really been a community supporter. I know that you support the Terre Haute Theater there. And you're also active in some other civic things as well. Has that been because of an interest or a feeling that that's something you should do?
I'm really interested in the Community Theater of Terre Haute and the work they've been doing. They're really incredibly difficult work of bringing some newer pieces to their smaller space and really working hard on that. And I think I've tried to be involved somewhat in that. It's really hard because I don't have as much time being here. But I'm also – I'm very interested in community, communal work, and political work. And also because I come from a very different background and outlook than a lot of people in the Midwest, having more communication between people with opposing views. I used to always think of people on certain sides of political issues as being narrow-minded, and I had the right answer, being the left-wing, wonderful liberal that I am. But now that I have met people with different outlooks, I really think joining with them and collaborating, I'm beginning to understand why people see things. And especially in the current climate when we have this really nasty kind of polarization happening, hoping to make more communication. And theater, actually, socially active theater, has always been really important in political movements. So I'd love to go into that direction more. It's very risky, but I'd love to.
And you'll be doing that a bit with the panels with You're in Town.
Yes. And You're in Town is it was very popular, but it hasn't been done in the Wabash Valley. It's been done at IU, I know. And it's difficult because it has a lot of dark humor, which I love. But it really opens questions because neither solution to the water shortage in You're in Town, even though it has this very happy music, neither solution really works. So it spurs an idea of what would work. And I mean, environmental concerns really should be top of the list for everyone, because if we don't have a planet, we won't be doing any of these other wonderful things. That's the end, folks.
Our guest on Profiles has been Sharon Ammon, theater director at St. Mary of the Woods College near Terre Haute. I'm George Walker for Profiles, and Sharon's chosen The Lime and the Coconut, performed by Nielsen, for our final selection.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the dime. His sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve this belly ache. I said, said, Doctor, to relieve this bellyache. Now let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up.
The program you have just heard was recorded in August of 2009. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. For WFIU, thanks for listening.